Welcome to The Blueprint, powered by K Marketing Co. Our topic today is breaking down the basics and the importance of the non-shiny things in marketing. Our guest today is our very own Ryan Morad, who is in charge of our ads, SEO, website, backends, all that great stuff. So we're bringing him in because a lot of times when we talk about marketing, when we have potential clients and clients talk about marketing, we like the shiny object. We like the pretty video. We like the pretty Facebook image. We like the pretty website. And I see you just over there smiling even as I'm talking about that. And all of that is great if the right people see it. And that's the non-shiny part of marketing, but the uber important part of marketing, because you can make it gorgeous, and if nobody's seeing it, what was the point?
That's right.
So we thought that as literally episode two, we're going to jump right in because, again, I think everybody goes right to shiny object. And the shiny object is very important, but equally as important, and honestly, probably even more so important, is what's going on behind the shiny object. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, Ryan.
So I wanted to start with one of my favorite new sayings I've recently heard, which covers basically what you just said, which is all cheese, no mousetrap.
Mm.
So that's saying that you can have the prettiest website in the world that, you know, inspires people to do what you want them to do. But if nobody's finding it, it's not doing you any good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with ad setup or really anything that you're doing marketing wise. If your strategies are set up, but they're not properly set up to where people will actually see it, there's no point. It's a waste
right.
of time and money.
Or even if your audience is too large mm-hmm. or is not the correct market. Even using the example, if you are a storefront with one location, let's say in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and you're running a national ad campaign without realizing it, you're just flushing money
Yeah.
down the toilet.
Yeah, you're just paying for people who won't come purchase your products to see your products, and that's not going to help anyone.
Exactly. So we're going to dig right in, and the first thing we're going to talk about is SEO and website optimization. So with that, what does SEO mean?
So SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization, and it's basically just the practice of formatting a website correctly so that and the content correctly so that Google and other kind of search engines that crawl your website better understand what kind of content you have so that they can deliver it to the right audiences.
Got it. And what makes technical SEO so important, and why do people ignore it?
So, yeah, that's a great question. Technical SEO is very important because it's the foundation of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's making sure that your pages have a proper page title and meta description and the headers are
formatted. Do you mean to tell me that if my H1 header is something that nobody looks for on the internet,
mm-hmm.
that's a bad idea?
That is a bad idea.
Why?
Because that is how H1 headers are one of the hundreds of different signals that Google uses to determine rankings in any given search query. So when somebody goes to Google and they search in, you know, whatever keywords they're putting in, Google runs what's called the Google auction every time. And it is going through and it's looking at all of the different websites that it's crawled and has indexed and deciding which ones best suit this person's query based on intention and keyword usage and whatnot. And so you want your website to be in that. And so one of the many signals they use is the H1, H2 headers and the formatting of your headers on your website. So if you have something on there that nobody searches, it doesn't help you at all.
What's a good example of that? One that I thought of is we had a client one time, and that client came up with this super catchy, fun title for what they wanted a landing page to have. And I thought it was genius. I was like, that's so fun. That's so catchy. And in that exact moment, you said, well, just so you know, in the last like 90 days, no one's ever searched that phrase.
Yeah.
And so you're taking up real estate on a super important piece
mm-hmm.
for something that nobody's searching.
That's right.
So an example for if somebody's kind of trying to understand what that is I could want the H1 header of my website to be Megan Kaulbach is super great and everybody loves her. And I'm positive that nobody has put that into Google in the last 30 days.
Probably not.
But what would be a good header instead of that?
Something along the lines of maybe even just making call box. That's something that people could potentially search. Or a lot of times what I recommend is you could put the direct answer to a question. Mm. So
there you go.
If you put, you know, Megan is awesome because of whatever, then if somebody
really
were to search that.
Right. Who's really good at marketing?
That's right. Yeah. If somebody were to search who's really good at marketing and your H1 header is Megan is really good at marketing, mm-hmm. that helps.
And sometimes the words that we want to use, again, even though they're catchy, even though they're impactful to us, aren't good places for the H1 header. And another example that you've taught me about is using a word that's spelled incorrectly. Mm. Example, if you have a company name and or you have a company slogan that you play on words, is that a good place to use as an H1 header?
Yeah, typically it's not. You want it to be spelled correctly, spelled the way that people will search it, at least.
Correct.
You want it to be something that Google understands,
right?
Too. You want it to be something that Google, and especially now with the rise of AI searches and stuff, you want all the AI crawls to understand what you're talking about and not just syntax clues. Mm. And now I will also explain what an H1 header is.
Yes.
If for people who don't understand, H1 headers are the number one header in a page hierarchy. That's usually the biggest header on a website. So when you enter a website and you see in big letters, you know, the whatever the page title is or whatever they want, you know, the introduction to the website there, that's usually the H1 header. Whenever we talk about H1, H2 in SEO, it's not usually an aesthetic thing because you can format it to where the big text isn't the H1. You can format it so that when a crawler like Google or AI or something goes and crawls your website and looks at it, they can see what the text is. But you can make it so that whatever text you want registers as the H1 or H2 to Google. Yeah.
And that kind of leads me into the next question is, how does poor website structure hurt your Google ranking?
Yeah, so poor website structure, especially missing structure pieces such as meta descriptions, or alt text in your images, they can hurt your website by, number one, I'd say, is keyword cannibalization. So that's where you've got... so you've got a bunch of pages on your website that are all about the same sort of topic because your business is in one industry. And so you've got possibly four different services that the search terms could be relatively similar for all four of those. And so if you end up just designing it based on aesthetics, then not actually formatting it, and then Google doesn't know what page is for what. There's no difference there to Google other than the content on the page.
Right.
And so I always say you just want to help Google as much as you can.
Right.
Same with the AI or
Google can't
Bing
help you if you don't tell Google the right thing.
That's right. You want to make sure that you're providing the search engines with as much information about what you do and what kind of service you provide as possible.
Without overdoing it.
Right.
Which is also
that is an issue. You don't want to overdo it as far as certain things.
You don't want to word vomit Google.
That's right. So the typical meta description, for example, that can be anywhere from 50 to 500 characters, but 155 characters
is the sweet spot.
So with any of these SEO tactics, everything has a sweet spot kind of deal.
All right, so why is optimizing site speed one of the best things that you can do for your site, but nobody's talking about it?
Yeah, so site speed.
Especially with all these videos.
Yes. So site speed is very important to your search rankings, and it's also very important to not only the SEO, but the user experience. And so that's the number one reason why Google has that as a ranking factor is because of the user experience. Google doesn't want to show the wrong website to somebody, and they don't want to show a website to somebody that they will immediately leave.
Right.
Google could immediately leave
if it takes your site too long to load.
That's it.
Then somebody will think it's a broken link, or just we're in an instantaneous world.
Right.
So waiting 2 seconds for something is
a long time. Yes, especially
as we laugh, but it's true.
It is true. It is true, especially because at this point, more than 50% of typically what you'll see on your website is that over half of the users are on their phone. Mm. That doesn't have the same processing power as a computer, so it takes longer to pull up.
Right.
And so if you're even if you're looking at it on your computer and you're running all the diagnostics that you can find and you see that your site speed on your desktop looks good, you also want to make sure that you're looking at mobile. And it's all for the same reason. You want to make sure that the user experience is fast and that it's nobody's ever left wondering why is this not working?
Not working.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point, too. You had me thinking about it's just as important. We see a lot of people that come in that have built a desktop site and haven't done the work to make the tablet and mobile side have the same user experience. Mm-hmm. Haven't given it the same amount of attention because you're working with a designer or a website developer and or you're doing it yourself and you are doing that work on the desktop side and are forgetting that over 50% of your viewers are on the mobile side. And by not giving that the same amount of attention as you've given your desktop side, you're losing out on 50% of your viewership having the experience that you want them to have.
Yeah. Yeah, and that goes for a lot of things. I've seen websites where their form is only accessible by desktop, and that's not good because how are people going to get in contact with you, or how are you going to collect leads if people
or overlapping can't find it. Elements?
Yep.
Especially because there's no standard mobile site anymore.
Right.
So tablets are of all different shapes and sizes. Phones are of all different shapes and sizes, and not having it formatted properly for all that is messing with the user experience, which is not good.
Absolutely.
All right. So why are images secretly killing your SEO?
Images could be killing your SEO because Google doesn't have eyes. And so it doesn't know what your image is.
Wait, what? It's not a person.
It's not a person. There's not a person sitting there
Google
entering
into Google.
Google
is not a person.
That's right.
So
whenever it's indexing your site, it'll see that there is an image and it can see the file name, it can see the alt text that you put there and anything else that you fill in as far as like accessibility settings to help with screen readers or to help with anything like that. Google takes all of that information into account. And so you want to make sure that everything's formatted correctly, not just for the accessibility reasons and for screen readers and to make sure that everybody who gets to your site can understand the content you have there. But also so that Google can understand, because as I keep saying, the most important thing is that Google understands what you're talking about.
And Google understands what you put into your website to tell it.
Right.
Right.
And so the biggest thing that you can do there is alt text. And so that is a kind of a back-end thing. Most people don't end up seeing alt text. It's different from a caption or a description that's under the photo.
And for somebody who isn't in the website development side, that essentially means the name on the photo file that you're telling the website that it is. So, example, people will build a DIY website and they'll screenshot something. And the alt text that goes to that image is screenshot, the date, and a number. Or image and some random numbers, or something even more if they copied and pasted an image off the internet. That's even worse.
Yeah.
We won't even get into that. But but that's what you're talking about, that when they don't change that description to something meaningful.
Right. And so for that, because a lot of times what happens is whenever you input an image, it'll create the alt text by default to be the same as the file name. Mm-hmm. And so that's where that comes from, where you'll see screenshot with a bunch of numbers, the date and whatever else. But for the most part, so what you want to end up putting in there is description. So it doesn't have to be specific. You don't have to name the person that's in it. But you want it to say...
Right, Google doesn't care about that.
Right.
Typically.
But a sunset over the beach is, what is in the picture? What are we looking at?
Right.
And that's really important for Google. It's also really good for accessibility. And so it's overall just a really good practice to make sure that you're always including alt texts. And you're also... The other part of image formatting is compressing. And that goes back to the site speed you were talking about. You want to make sure that your images and other file types are compressed to the most optimized version that your website can host. And for example, we use Wix for everything. And so Wix automatically converts everything to WebP format. But that's what you want. If it didn't automatically do that, that would be something that I made sure it does, is making sure that everything's converted into a more compressed version so that it can load faster on somebody's device.
Example, like a WordPress site.
Yeah, so with a WordPress site, I do believe there are plugins that automatically do it. But if you're trying to do as much on your own as possible, then my suggestion is just to make sure that you're uploading a WebP or whatever the most comparable version would be for your website. You want to make sure that you're uploading that the first time.
Got it. All right, let's talk about paid ads and campaign structure. Mm-hmm. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, but still not pretty things.
Yeah.
But very, very important things. So you've invested the money to make the image, to make the video, to make the website, to create the whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't invest equally in your audience, mm-hmm. you're not going to get the results that you want, right? So starting with that, the first question is the hidden value of structuring your paid ad campaigns correctly from day one. And why that's important.
Yeah, that's really important because, I mean, it kind of goes back to that saying that I really like. That's all cheese, no mousetrap.
Yes.
It's you want to make sure that the structure is there for every part of the process, right? You want to make sure that it's set up, the targeting is set up, who and where you want your ads to show to. That's number one. And then number two would be, what's the messaging? You got to make sure that the right creatives and the right graphics are going with the right copy. And you want to make sure that everything's the messaging is very cohesive. And with the messaging, I'd say all the way down to the landing page. You want to mm-hmm. make sure that where the ads are leading the users to express a very similar and cohesive messaging.
Just so if somebody doesn't fully understand what you're saying there, we have had experiences where we're doing a site audit or a marketing audit for a client, and they may have hired a professional. Or they have recently have set up the ad campaign and everything in that is structured correctly. However, they haven't invested in the website mm-hmm. of where it's sending you to.
Right.
Which means that from your ad performance, it'll show that you had great results mm-hmm. from the ad, mm-hmm. but where you're sending them to, they're going to bounce right back off because yeah. the destination that you have set up, you haven't invested in making sure that that's a good destination for them.
That's right. Most of the time when somebody clicks on an ad, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm ready to buy this right now. Mm-hmm. It means I want to learn more.
Right.
And so if your landing page or where you're sending the people with the ads isn't set up to handle that and to answer the questions that they have and to so that they can learn more, then they'll just leave. It's not, and that's wasted money getting them to come to the website just to leave.
Or if you had one of the other examples I'm thinking of is if you've invested in an ad campaign that has a good call to action, has a good hook, and then it sends them back to the homepage of
yeah.
the website. And now they've got to start all over again.
Yeah.
Not investing in the specific page that is a continuation of what the ad is trying to say.
Yeah. If it goes back to the homepage, more times than not, it's too generic to answer the questions that they specifically clicked on the ad for.
Correct.
And so you want to make sure that they have to take as few steps as possible between
right.
the time they get to the website and whatever your conversion is, whether that's filling out a form or purchasing a product. You want to make sure that there's as little steps in between point
Correct.
A and point B as possible.
Agreed. And on that, why is setting up conversion tracking properly, why will that make or break your campaign?
You really don't know if a campaign is successful or not if you don't set up a good conversion tracking. Otherwise, you're just throwing spaghetti at the wall and trying to see what sticks. Mm. You can come back and say, hey, we had, 200 clicks last week, but nobody bought anything. And so you don't know why, and you don't know where at what point in that process did we lose them? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure that you've got all the conversion tracking set up so they know you can look at not only the ads performance but the website performance as well and see, okay, here's all the people coming in from that ad, here's what they did, here's where they ended up going, and it helps you to adjust and make the ad structure that much better. Just to see what people want to see.
Right. And really looking at the goal of the campaign.
Right.
And sometimes we want, as a business owner or a nonprofit that is trying to get results, you want to go in for the kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily about going in for the kill. you have to first cultivate a relationship
mm-hmm.
and build an authority with that person. And that takes time. Mm-hmm. And so really looking at, are you going in for the kill or are you going in to subscribe to a newsletter? And if they're subscribing to a newsletter, here's the kicker. Are you sending said newsletter?
Yeah, is there an actual newsletter?
Is there an actual newsletter? Yeah. So knowing what is the soft launch mm-hmm. into... Now, sometimes the come in for the kill, if it's a low-cost product, great, do that. But a lot of times, if you're in the service industry, if you're in a nonprofit, if you're in a higher price point item, you're trying to cultivate a relationship mm-hmm. from that. And coming in and an instant, give me all your contact information without giving me any value.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I personally try to put my contact information in as little places as possible.
Right.
I know that I don't want to be bombarded with things because I already am. And,
right.
And so you want to make sure that there's a reason to do that. The
right.
user has a reason to put their information in because they're getting something valuable.
Valuable from
That's
it.
That's right.
Yep.
And that kind of is reminding me of like one of any time that I start working with somebody on ads, one of the first things I ask is, what's your goal?
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, it's not a smart goal, you know, mm-hmm. a specific measurable goal. It's usually, I want more people to buy the product.
Right.
Or I want...
Which is too vague.
Yeah.
It's not specific. Like
right.
you're saying. It's not
right.
a smart goal. Yeah.
And when I'll start talking about what is your target demographic, who do you want to see these ads? And it's, I want...
Everybody.
Yeah, people with money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People with money who want this product. Cool.
Cool.
And so
Ditto.
Step one, I would go as far as to say... step one in any ads campaign is to sit down and actually create a SMART goal. Come mm-hmm. up with a SMART goal that's something that's specific, measurable, something that you can track, that you can tell whether or not this was a success. Because if you were to come out and say, like, for this next campaign over the next month, I want 100 form submissions from people in the state of Pennsylvania. That is a specific, measurable, attainable goal.
Right.
That gives you a really good starting point. And it gives you a direction. From there, there's a lot of things that, all right, now it narrows it down. You're focused. Whereas if somebody were to say, I just want more people to fill out the form.
That's so broad.
Right. And so whenever at the end of the month, I'm looking at it and I say, 50 people filled out your form. That's great. For the second person mm-hmm. who just wanted more people to fill out the form, it was not a success to the first person. And then when you set up the proper tracking, then you can see why. Why is it not a success? Where did this fail? Was it in the messaging of the ad itself? Was it in the website and the landing page? Or at what point in the process did we lose them?
Right. And that's also, again, back to like the word vomiting on the SEO and giving too much information. Sometimes when you cast the net too wide, you think you're going to catch everybody and you end up catching nobody because mm-hmm. the message doesn't actually speak to anybody.
That's right.
So having that very, very specific. And I mean, that also goes into the fact of, which we won't get into, but on this episode, but A/B testing
mm-hmm.
and seeing, we had a client situation a couple months ago where I could have guaranteed you that ad A was going to be the ad that mm-hmm. everybody was going to click on, everybody was going to convert on, and that was going to be the winner. And we did an A/B test, and the one that I didn't think was the one that resonated with more people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the importance of the A/B testing, is it may be how I think, but the overall person for that client, it wasn't, which is why we do an A/B test, why we work as a team,
mm-hmm.
why you don't become so narrow-minded that you think only this way will work, and you look at those A/B testing, seeing what resonates with the audience that you're trying to reach.
That's right.
All right, next question. So audience targeting versus audience exclusion.
Mm-hmm. So there are, when you're setting up ads, whether it's Google ads or Facebook ads or anything like that, there are different targeting options. And then you can also find different exclusion options. Like, for example, with Google ads, there are negative keywords. There are exclusions as far as geographical exclusions or even making sure that it's only showing on mobile or anything like that. And that's just really helping to narrow down your focus and your ad spend to make sure that the right people that you want to see the ads are the people who are receiving them. And so the targeting is really good for you. You have a message that you want everyone in this area to hear, then we'll just set it up for a geographical location. That's your target, is the location. If you say, I want every man over the age of 32 to hear this in this location, then your targeting is the location. It's also the gender at that point. And then your exclusion would be the age. You want to make sure that everything is as fine-tuned as possible and as focused so that you're not just throwing money out there.
Mm. Or if your example, having an ad that's targeted around a school, but you are targeting the ad towards the residents and the parents, you might exclude teachers.
Yeah.
From that, because they're also in that radius that you're looking for, yeah, but they're not necessarily members of the school district in respect to being residents,
right,
in the school district. So,
and the other thing that I typically try to get away from is whenever you're doing Google ads, for example, I try to not pay for something that would organically show up first. Mm. So the example I use is that in our Google search ads, I have our K Marketing Co. as a negative keyword, mm-hmm, because they're already, if somebody's
already
searching for us,
they already know who we are.
Why would we pay for them?
Correct.
Exactly.
Yep.
And so that's part of the exclusion, that it may not narrow down who sees it, but if I'm paying per click,
correct,
let's pay for the ones who don't know who we are.
Right. Let's not pay for people that came there specifically for us.
Right.
We're taking the shortcut to find our phone number.
Yeah. We got the next four or five links in the search results are all us.
Yes.
We don't need to pay for the ad at the top.
Agreed. All right. So let's move on. So our final thing we're going to kind of cover as our overview to this, we're going to dig more into it with talking about AI, questions about ads more specifically. We're going to keep covering that in upcoming episodes, but we know that it's important to lay a foundation for what we're talking about so that we can continue to expand upon that. So the last thing we're going to talk about is analytics and tracking. And are your analytics telling you the truth?
Mm. Yeah, so that's a great question. That kind of also goes back to the setup process. You want to make sure that from the beginning, your analytics are set up properly, that they're tracking everything. You want to make sure with your website tracking that it's not just what pages people are on, but the behavior. And you also want to know you want to set it up so that the traffic source is correct as well, because that can tie into ads performance and understanding your SEO performance as well. Mm-hmm. Are these people coming from a Google organic search? Are they coming from a Facebook post? Are they coming from a paid ad? What you want to see where the users are coming from, where the traffic's coming from, and what the user behavior is on the website, so that you can make data-based decisions for any sort of updates or optimizations that you do to the website.
Totally makes sense. All right. And to wrap it up today, our last question is, what is a UTM?
So a UTM is a parameter that you can set up on an ad that helps with the tracking on analytics. If you click on an ad on Google or on Facebook or something, you'll notice most of the time that at the end of the URL, there's a bunch of random symbols and stuff that when you look at it, you're like, that's definitely not intentionally part of the website's domain, right? That's a UTM. That's the code that's tracking. It's usually the source, like the platform of where the ads are, the campaign name, any sort of other specific information that helps somebody later to understand the success of a campaign. The UTM code is just added to the end of the URL.
Mm. So to wrap things up today, first, this is episode 2. So if you heard this and you thought, whoo, that was a lot, that's okay. You're not alone. One of the things that we use here at K-Marketing is it's your job, so the client's job, to be really great at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our job to make them look really great doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of looking really great doing it is everything we just talked about. And the goal of today's podcast was really to lay a baseline of what goes on behind the scenes of your marketing. And if you're listening and thinking, gosh, that was a lot, start with one thing. You know, you can't eat an elephant all at one time, but you can eat it one bite at a time. And also to remember to reach out for help on things that you know are outside of your wheelhouse, and start with one thing. Start with one thing you can do better today to get your business either off the ground and running, to get your goals achieved in that. So we want to have this podcast be a really open place that people can ask questions, gain confidence, know what they can do themselves, where they want to reach out for help, and also really to look at to your current team and what they're working on, and are they working in their strengths? And are they working in what brings them joy? And we say that all the time about Ryan being our ads man. And we find all the joy in the pretty things. But we know that that's only one piece of the puzzle. And so, Ryan, thank you for being our guest today. Mm-hmm. And we're excited for upcoming episodes. We're going to be talking about everything related to business, entrepreneurship, some of the things coming up. Specifically with this is AI. We're going to dig into that. We're also going to dig into other aspects like networking, video production. We've got a whole lineup of really exciting things. So thank you for being our guest today. And yeah, I'm sure you will be back as our guest often because these are definitely things that that people want to gain confidence on so that they can continue to make smart business decisions, mm-hmm. knowing behind the reason why behind those decisions. So thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week.